sound there from the 1968 film version of Romeo and Juliet, Shakespeare's star-crossed lovers who die because of a family feud. Except, spoiler alert, the real reason Romeo and Juliet die is a pandemic. There is a class at Worcester Polytechnic Institute. It's called Infected Shakespeare. I love that name. And it will make you rethink a lot about the Bard. Michelle Ephraim teaches Infected Shakespeare and is also the co-author of the cocktail recipe book, wait for it, Shakespeare Not Stirred. Professor Michelle Ephraim joins us now for our next installment of Brilliant Boston. Michelle, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you. So I'm going to play a little more sound right off the top because this is Shakespeare. So this is Ballygill as Romeo from a Royal Shakespeare Company production, finding what he thinks is Juliet's dead body.
Dear Juliet, why art thou yet so fair? I will stay with thee, and never from this palace of dim night depart again. Here will I set up my everlasting rest. Come, bitter conduct, come and savory guide. Thus, with a kiss, I die.
And he dies. Michelle, it never gets any less heartbreaking. But for those of us who have been out of high school for a little while, maybe literally remind us what's happening. Why does he think she's dead? Why does he die?
Right. Well, I always tell my class, actually, I ask them at the beginning of class, how did Romeo and Juliet die? And they say, duh, you know, double suicide. The plan for these star-crossed lovers is for Juliet to take a potion given to her by Friar Lawrence that will make her seem dead. So her banished lover, Romeo, is meant to find her in the Capulet family tomb and say, yay, you're alive, and we're going to run off and be happy together. However, he does not get the message, literally does not get the message, and he thinks she's dead. So he kills himself, she wakes up, she kills herself, and that is the end of the story.
And I do want to note, I always do this, we're going to have fun with this segment. We're going to talk about some amazing stuff, but we did just talk about dying by suicide, two people dying by suicide. Before the end of the segment, I'll put up for listeners, I'll make sure to give you the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. But for those of you for whom this is painful, we're going to go on now into this subject, and we're going to be a little bit playful for it, with it. So I just want to be mindful of our listeners. Oh, and Amanda reminds me, actually, 988 is a very rememberable number. That's the new mental health hotline number that's nationwide. If you need support, dial 988. Okay, so we're going to step away from that because we want to come back to what you're teaching in your class, Professor Michelle Ephraim, which is that actually that's not practically what happened. Practically what happened is they died because of the plague. Explain that a little bit.
Yes. So I always explain that to my students. They died because of the plague. Friar Lawrence gives his fellow friar, Friar John, a letter to take to Romeo, who has gone to Mantua, which is the neighboring town, to explain this to him. And Friar John doesn't get there. He doesn't get there because he's stopped by people who are employed to police the streets to make sure that people who are infected or who have come into close contact with someone infected do not travel around.
Okay, so you've got a little bit for us to read here. I get to read Shakespeare with you.
Absolutely.
But I'm giving you the hard stuff. So we're going to read a little of this. I'm going to be Friar Lawrence and you're going to be Friar John. So, welcome from Mantua. What says Romeo? Or, if his mind be writ, give me his letter.
Going to find a barefoot brother out, one of our order, to associate me, here in this city, remember that line, here in this city, visiting the sick, and finding him, the searchers of the town, suspecting that we both were in a house where the infectious pestilence did reign, sealed up the doors and would not let us forth, so that my speed to Mantua there was stayed.
Okay, so iambic pentameter, not easy to follow on the radio, just literally what did Friar John just say?
He said, well, I was going to travel with another friar, which was, very typical. And that guy was visiting someone who was in an infected house, so with people or a person who was infected with the plague. And then the searchers, who, again, are employed to police this kind of situation, once they saw Friar John and the other friar, they were aware that they had had contact with someone who was infected, and they made sure that they didn't travel anywhere. This may sound familiar to people. So he could not get to Mantua.
All right, so let's read a little bit more. So I'm again Friar Lawrence, you're Friar John. who bear my letter then to Romeo?
I could not send it. Here it is again. Nor get a messenger to bring it thee. So fearful were they of infection.
Unhappy fortune, where the infectious pestilence did reign, sealed up the doors, so fearful were they of infection. I feel like I got kind of the cool line there. Sorry about that. But now I hear it. And you explain this, right? Well, you do it better. So explain the exchange we just heard.
Right. So Friar Lawrence is saying with great trepidation, I imagine Shakespeare could have put a lot of ums in here. Bear my letter. And he says, oh, no, it actually never got there. In fact, here it is. And no one else sent it either because there was so much fear of infection. Yeah. So it didn't get to Romeo. And one thing I want to point out, too, is that Shakespeare deviates from his sources for Romeo and Juliet. And his source material, they have the plague raging in Mantua. In Romeo and Juliet, the implication, and actually the clear reference to the plague in Verona, here in this city is the line. So Shakespeare has the plague going on in Verona, not in the neighboring
town.
Because
it's dramatically helpful to do so.
Well, it's dramatically helpful, and also people could relate that he was writing Romeo and Juliet right after they'd gotten, sort of on the other end of a major plague outbreak. So this was very familiar to his audience, unfortunately.
So we're speaking with Associate Professor Michelle Ephraim, who's at Worcester Polytechnic Institute and teaches a very popular class called Infected Shakespeare. I want to pick up a little bit more on that. It's not only there in Romeo and Juliet—well, okay, let me back up. I've got this sound I'm excited to get to, and I was about to throw to it, but I realize I've got one more thing I want to pick up here first. I learned that Shakespeare's birth and upbringing was affected by the plague.
Oh, yes. I mean, plague outbreaks punctuated his entire life. From the moment he was born through his death, I mean, there was plague outbreaks constantly. There were overall, at least 17 outbreaks in England between 1500 and 1665. There was one starting in 1563. He was born in 1564. Another one in 1592, just as he had started to make it in London.
So bam, bam, bam.
Bam, bam, bam. Exactly. Yeah. Over and over again, a relentlessness.
And so that gives me a chance to play this other sound that I wanted to. So he kind of goes at it indirectly or coyly or slyly, just to illustrate for people how it was threading through art at the time. This is a poem, A Litany of Time and Plague. It's by a contemporary of Shakespeare's, Thomas Nash, and it's read by Tom O'Bedlam.
Rich men trust not in wealth. Gold cannot buy you health. Physic himself must fade. All things to end are made. The plague full swift goes by. I am sick. I must die. Lord, have mercy on us.
Now, Michelle, that sits in my gut after what we've lived through these last couple of years. Yes. What is it like to teach this class now?
Oh, well, I actually was teaching this class before the pandemic. I taught it last time in the fall of 2020 over Zoom. And I usually begin the segment on pandemics, plagues, by saying, imagine, with the goal of creating a suspension of disbelief. Imagine what it would be like. Well, I can cut that segment out. Right. Well, just it's something that we can't imagine. Now we can, unfortunately. There were so many themes, so many uncanny moments in the class, and it was really, it was chilling and wonderful to experience that with the students. I mean, for me to look at these documents written in the 16th and 17th centuries through the eyes of someone who now understood pandemics from firsthand experience, to experience that alongside the students was really amazing. For example, reading about class divides, reading about how the poor were demonized, reading about wealthy people fleeing to their expensive vacation homes. But class divisions. Students were very, very passionate about talking about these issues normally, and even more so because it hit so close to home.
So hearing you say that, I guess I want to ask you, did it make you angry? This is knowable stuff from hundreds of years ago that had come forward not only in history, but as you're showing us, in one of the most famous playwrights, if not the most famous writer of the Western world.
I mean, I'm a big Shakespeare fan, so nothing he does really makes me angry. But I will say I had a new appreciation of Shakespeare.
No, I mean, does it make you angry that we're here again when all of that history is there?
Well, right. Well, this is sort of what I'm getting to, is that I felt like in Shakespeare there was something optimistic. There was something about resilience that was helpful for me, and I like to think it was helpful for my students as well. To think about what his life must have been like, you know, with all these plague outbreaks, with losing his son. Mm. We don't know that his son died from the plague. We don't know how he died. But so much loss at a period of time where there was so much loss. And that here he kept writing. And there's so many references to plagues, contagion in Shakespeare's work that are metaphoric. He's not saying, oh, the plague outbreak, and referencing it directly, but he is writing a lot about contagion. And one of the things I talked to the students about was how he pivoted artistically, that he was almost reclaiming the incidents of the plague and the loss that everyone around him had experienced, and turning that into art by way of metaphor.
So there was another aspect, and I'm going to tell listeners now, we're going to get a little bawdy here for these last couple of minutes. But there was another aspect, which was, you know, this class you're teaching, Michelle Ephraim from Worcester Polytechnic Institute, is called Infected Shakespeare. So I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but this will be fun to see if you recognize right away where I'm going. So here is the sound.
Oh, no. What's the news with you?
Yonder man is carried to prison.
Well, what has he done?
A woman.
But what is his offense?
Groping for trouts in a peculiar river.
A lot of not-so-subtle entendre there. Paige Clements is Mistress Overdone, and Lisa Barnes is her employee, Pompey. And that's from a 2022 reading sponsored by History Alive of...
Measure for Measure.
And tell me why this one's in your class.
Oh, well, it is all about infection. It is about... It's set in Vienna, and it's about a very corrupt society where all kinds of sexual indiscretions are going on left and right, and there's sort of a running subplot about a house of prostitution, but it eventually, if you will, sort of makes its way infection-like into the main plot as well.
I think we have a little bit of that. So here I'm going to play Act 2, Scene 1, right where the bumbling constable... Elbow apprehends the character Pompey, who works for Mistress Overdone at this house that you're talking about. And this is performed by actor Vincent Bagnall.
He, sir, a tapster, sir, parcel board. One that serves a bad woman, whose house was, as they say, plucked down in the suburbs. And now she professes a hothouse, which I think is a very ill house, too.
So was Shakespeare essentially using, I don't know that this is the correct word for a sexually transmitted infection, but a pestilence of some kind as a metaphor for other things that eat away at our structures and ourselves?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And Measure for Measure, which was written in the early 17th century, was very much connected to, long experience of plague outbreaks, syphilis outbreaks. So again, you know, Shakespeare is using this to refer to actual medical happenings around him. Syphilis was a epidemic in London at this time.
So how did people find it funny?
You know, one of the things I was going to say before, in all of Shakespeare's plays, whether they're categorized as tragedies or comedies, you have tragic and comic elements. Like, I find Romeo hilarious. He's in the fact that he's whining and groaning about being dumped by a woman makes it even, you know, it's even more ridiculous than the fact that there's a plague going on. It's like, dude, you know, what are you doing? So why is this funny? Well, you know, Shakespeare makes it funny. I think there's something therapeutic about conveying it in this way for his audience. Absolutely.
All right. So listen, I wish we could take the whole class. That is Michelle Ephraim, who's a professor, associate professor at Worcester Polytechnic Institute. She's co-author of the book Shakespeare Not Stirred and teaches Infected Shakespeare. Fascinating. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Tiziana.